Now, I'll get to my panel in a moment, but first I want to go to our Cork studio where Colm Henry, the Chief Clinical Officer of the HSE, is standing by for us. Thank you for joining us, Colm.
Not at all. Thank you, Kitty.
Colm, many people may be alarmed at the news there that they will have heard in the bulletin that the vaccination of over 70s may be delayed because of these supply problems with the AstraZeneca vaccine. This is what was acknowledged by the Taoiseach in his interview with Brendan O'Connor there. Can you tell us any more about this?
Well, of course, it's disappointing to hear that the doses that we're depending on to roll this vaccine into this vulnerable cohort, beginning, of course, with over 85s and working our way down to over 70-year-olds out there in the community, to hear news that we may not get the stocks we were expecting. Nevertheless, it's important to offer hope still. We're waiting on finalisation of those numbers, and that will be worked out early next week between the EU member states and AstraZeneca, and of course our own Department of Health and HSE will be taking a keen interest in this.
But if, as we're told, Colm, that it could be 60% less supply available to us for the first quarter, that would have a massive impact, given how many of our eggs we have placed in the AstraZeneca basket.
It would, if it turns out to be so. But I would say there's been many turns in the road and bumps in the road to date, and there will be many more. And we heard similar reports from Pfizer and about shortfall of supplies, which did not turn out to be so as bad as predicted. So I would urge caution till we hear the final numbers through AstraZeneca. And can I say in the meantime, Katie, we are ploughing ahead with that exercise of the most vulnerable of the older in residential care settings. By tomorrow, we'll have hopefully hit nearly 70,000 between workers and residents in residential care settings, and they will all have received as much as possible, received their first dose by the end of next week. So we are progressing.
That's still a delay in what our original targets were, though. Isn't a significant delay?
We're doing this under very difficult circumstances. There are outbreaks in nursing homes, and up to 25, maybe higher percent of nursing homes. And as people will know from previous communication, that people who are actively sick or recovering from the illness, the vaccine is contraindicated. But we are going into all such settings, including where there are outbreaks, to try and vaccinate as many people as possible, as quickly as possible, and then progress to the second vaccine.
Okay. And just in relation to that, you mentioned it there, the Pfizer-BioNTech supply issue. Is that sorted now? Are we back on track with the supply of that vaccine?
We have a confirmed supply that will bring us through to mid-February, that will allow us to complete those two dose schedules for nursing home residents and staff, and also allow us to complete the schedule of healthcare workers who receive the first dose. That's over 70,000 to date.
Okay, yeah. So in relation to the healthcare workers, because they were the ones that were sort of pushed back a little because of that supply issue, Are they going to be getting their are the ones that were pushed back and didn't get their first dose last week, are they getting it next week?
It's not a question of push back, Katie. It's a question of getting to as many frontline healthcare workers as we can, with this upwards of 190,000 people working in healthcare in some shape or form in the country. And a significant proportion of those will be direct facing in terms of patient care. We have used a framework which we sent out to all hospitals, community settings, that we want to apply for the use of the vaccine. At this point in time, we can complete vaccination of those people who've got the first dose. That's about 73,000. When we finish the cycle of vaccinations in nursing homes and the second dose for these people, and we get additional doses of those.
Okay, so just because I know a lot of healthcare workers are really, really hanging on every word of this now. They really are anxious to get their vaccinations. Are you saying that if you didn't get your first dose so far to date, that you won't get your first dose until all of those who have gotten that dose have had their second dose? Is that what you're saying?
What I'm saying is, based on the evidence, is we have to complete the two-dose schedule, which means we have to complete the dosing schedule for those who got the first dose. Bear in mind, Katie, that the evidence for this vaccine is based on two doses given within a set time.
I think everyone understands that, Colm. Just to be clear, you're saying that healthcare workers who haven't so far gotten their first dose will not be getting that dose in the coming weeks?
We are hoping to begin new cohorts of healthcare workers in the first or second week of February, depending on confirmed deliveries.
Okay, so that's not going to happen until the first or second week of February?
No, certainly not the second.
There'll be great disappointment at that.
There is, and we've communicated out to the system to say that as soon as we get confirmation of delivery of stock from Pfizer, and we believe at this stage we're looking at probably the second week of February to resume addressing priority healthcare workers with that first dose of Pfizer vaccine.
Okay, can I move you on then to the infection levels in hospital? I know that the I will be talking to Phil Nihe shortly, but they have a statement out, the INMO have a statement out today saying that infection rates in hospitals are now out of control. And that there are basic measures that should be in place by now that simply are not there.
Could I say that what I certainly agree with is infection levels are out of control, and that they're out of control everywhere, not just hospitals. They're out of control in the community, and they're 10 times, even though we're seeing falling levels, we're still seeing a 5-day average of 2,500 cases per day, 10 times what it was at the beginning of December. Of course, we've learned not just through this experience in the third surge, but through the first surge in particular, that high levels of community transmission will inevitably lead to high levels of infection and outbreaks in hospital settings.
I think the figures are quite shocking. If there's 1,893 COVID cases in hospital today, can you tell us how many of those actually contracted COVID in hospital?
We can say exactly in the past week, we've been tracking cases of what we call healthcare acquired COVID infections since June the 22nd. Throughout summer, they were in small single figures, and we began to see a rise to double figures in October. At the end of December, through the first weeks of January, we saw those cases rise from 40 to 50 per week of healthcare associated COVID infection to 150, and in the latest figure, 450 cases in 1 week. So the number of new cases that arise because in a hospital setting have risen quite dramatically since the end of December and throughout January.
So would that tally with what the Taoiseach said this week, that about a third of the cases that we're now treating in hospital for COVID acquired COVID in hospital?
There's a great deal of variation between, and much of it is dependent on outbreaks within hospital settings, where we have greater numbers of outbreaks and more serious outbreaks, we see greater numbers of secondary transmission. And could I say, in response to the other part of your question, Katie, there have been huge efforts made nationally, but particularly at local level, in terms of protecting patients and services. Hospitals are unrecognisable from what they were like in the first surge, in terms of their structure, their layout, their streaming, the testing of patients coming in, the screening of staff, the instructions of staff to stay at home with symptoms, triggered testing of staff and and patients, okay, at certain levels of infection and outbreaks.
Sorry to cut across you, Colm, I'm just so anxious to get through all the very important issues we have to talk to you about. The PPE issue, the INMO statement saying that we need a national requirement for these FFP2 masks to be used across all healthcare settings, because many of our healthcare workers are just wearing these basic surgical masks, which are not good enough.
Well, our infection prevention control advice has evolved in line with our evolved knowledge and awareness of how this virus behaves.
Why don't all our healthcare workers have these masks then?
These masks are advised for particular settings initially during the first and second surge, and based on the evidence we knew at the time, they were advised when staff were engaged in what's called aerosol generating procedures. We now know with this new strain that it is much more transmissible, so we've changed the advice in the use of FFP masks and lowered the bar for their use so that it's based on any risk assessment locally in terms of the likelihood of COVID outbreaks.
Available for all healthcare workers who believe they require them?
We have lowered the bar that based on local assessment and risk assessment based on clinical advice locally, they should be made available to staff if needed.
But are they available is the
question?
Yes,
they are. We've seen a 5 to 10-fold increase in demand in FFP masks over the past 2 weeks, and that reflects the increased demand and increased use.
What about the distance between beds?
The distance between beds, our instruction in line with what the WHO instructed and many other countries is, we say that there should be at least 1 metre distance between patients in healthcare settings, but that doesn't pertain everywhere. In uncontrolled settings such as waiting rooms,
Is 1 metre, and we were told 2 metres if you're out for a walk with somebody. You're saying it's 1 metre is acceptable between beds in a healthcare setting?
We base this on that healthcare settings are largely controlled settings. We test patients coming in for COVID. We test, we have triggered testing during outbreaks. We have use of PPE. We've use of infection prevention and control measures. Healthcare is much safer than it was at the beginning of COVID, and there's much more control measures and much greater sense of awareness.
But did you not just do a study last week telling us you had a 6 times higher exposure to COVID in a healthcare setting than in the community.
But that the primary outcome of that study, Katie, the precise study, which looked at 4,000 healthcare workers, was it showed a huge variation in seroprevalence between healthcare workers between Dublin and Galway, and that the single greatest predictor of this was local community transmission. And it is an inescapable and uncomfortable fact that where there's high levels of uncontrolled community transmission, despite our best measures, it is impossible to keep this virus out of hospital settings.
Are you satisfied that enough is being done to keep healthcare workers and patients safe in our hospitals at this moment with this new variant now in so high and prevalent in the community?
I'm certainly not satisfied with the levels of disease we have in the community, because it presents a huge threat, not just to patients in the community, but to our services and to our staff and to our patients.
Can I ask you in relation to, just before I leave the infection control, the issue of testing around outbreaks. Did the HSE introduce a national outbreak task force?
We have a national outbreak task force in place for acute hospital settings, yes.
This is only since December, though, is it?
Correct, but infection prevention control measures and testing strategy predated that. But we have, and since the figures began to rise, as I mentioned earlier in the interview, of healthcare-associated infection, we trigger an outbreak management committee.
Okay, and just the other bad news, or I suppose worrying news that emerged yesterday evening was Boris Johnson confirming that this new details about this variant, and saying that their scientists now believe it may be up to 30-40% associated with a higher mortality rate. Is that of serious concern?
It is. There's some evidence in the London School of Hygiene and Tropical Medicine and from the Imperial College London, using a variety of methodology, which suggests a relative risk of mortality of about 1.3. Now, much more study is needed to confirm this, but these are pointers towards not just increased transmissibility of this virus, but potentially a more virulent form, which we didn't believe until these studies are beginning to emerge. But more study is needed. But what it does do is increase our collective and individual awareness of how important it is to adhere to all those measures that we know break down transmission of the virus and prevented jumping from person to person or from place to place.
Finally, before I let you go, Colm, the word out of the CUH, where you were down there today, they've exceeded their critical care capacity since last night. We know the CEO there is calling for volunteers to cover 12-hour shifts in ICU over the coming weeks. We're hearing there's no spare ICU capacity, no spare ICU beds, I should say, in 12 out of the 28 acute hospitals around the country now. Where is this going to go over the next week or indeed the next number of weeks?
Katie, the situation in critical care at this point in time is precarious. I cannot say any. It is still within our control. What we are seeing now is we are going right into that surge capacity we built up over the summer. We are redeploying staff, the staff we trained during the summer. And thankfully, we had planned for this in terms of procurement of devices. So in addition to those 215 so patients with COVID in ITU, which is an extraordinary number with a singular disease, we have 430 patients outside ITU on some kind of device support, whether it's high flow oxygen or non-invasive ventilation. That's an extraordinary figure. But again, if I could say that, I give tribute on air to our staff who are not just redeployed staff who are working double shifts. In Cork, you mentioned this morning, we have examples of consultants, GPs, and manager of one local hospital, South Infirmary herself, a trained nurse, all offering shift work and voluntary work to support the additional 3 or 4 beds in the CUH needed last night.
Okay, Colm Henry, many thanks for joining us from our Cork studio today. Just before I move on, because I want to go on to Phil Nihay in a moment, but can I bring you in, Roisin Shortall, in relation to that news about the AstraZeneca vaccine shortfall and the impact that might have on our rollout?
Yes, Katie, that news overnight is really disappointing. We're in a situation now where there is huge uncertainty about all aspects of this. Uncertainty in relation to the supplies of the vaccines, but also its efficacy. And there's also uncertainty, of course, about the virus and the likely behaviour of the virus in respect of new variants and how it might mutate and adapt to the vaccines that are becoming available. So, I said a few weeks ago on this programme, and I repeat that this must be regarded now as a national emergency. What the government has been doing and what everybody has been working on over recent months is not working And we need to take a new approach. We need stricter lockdowns, hard and all as that is going to be. But we have to do that. Our health service is overwhelmed. People are at breaking point and we need a new approach. And it's not just about moving immediately. We do need to move immediately in respect of restrictions. But we also need to have a longer term plan. And, you know, we can't be operating on the basis of a 4-week timescale, which is what the Taoiseach seemed to be indicating, that we'll continue with this review in 4 weeks. Rolling lockdowns are not working. Okay. We have to face that and we have to take a new approach.
Okay.
And I believe very firmly that that approach has to be a zero COVID approach.
OK, Roisin, we will be getting back to that issue later in the programme.